At a 2007 debate between the atheist philosopher Daniel Dennett and theologian Alistair McGrath, an audience member asked whether there was a future for atheism and why. He further stipulated that this answer shouldn't be from a scientific point of view, but from the heart. Dennett's answer? Oh, that's easy. There's no future for atheism because we're going to destroy the planet before the future arrives. McGrath's answer? I would wickedly say yes, that there is a future for atheism, because people don't know a good thing when they see it. People don't know a good thing when they see it. That's exactly what's happening in today's gospel. We're skipping ahead quite a bit in John's gospel, but what is happening is in line with what we've experienced already. So Jesus brings transformation to an individual and to the wider church through an act of love. But this time, that transformation is put on trial by those who simply can't recognize a good thing when they see it. Of course, it isn't just the blind man in need of healing. The disciples see him and immediately ask, "Who messed up? Who's to blame for this, Jesus? Did the man do something to deserve this, or did his parents?" And to be fair to the disciples, there are scriptures that follow exactly this line of thinking. At the beginning of the Ten Commandments, we hear that God punishes children to the third and fourth generation of those who reject him for the parents' sins. Fortunately, there are scriptural correctives to this. Jeremiah 31:19-20 and Ezekiel 18:1-4 tell us that everyone is responsible for their own sins, not those of their parents. But whether it's the children suffering for the parents' sins or for people suffering for their own, the outcome is kind of the same. I mean, the whole thought is kind of the same. All suffering has to have a cause, and it always has to be someone's fault. Jesus is not going to go into the question of fault at all with this man. Neither this man nor his parents did anything to deserve blindness and a beggarly existence. That doesn't mean that there aren't overarching causes of sickness, incapacity, and death that trace back to the fall. But it does mean that in a fallen world, cause and effect often don't match. They don't go together. The fallen world is not a moral one. It often doesn't make sense. We only need to, well, consider our own lives or open our preferred news app to know that. Jesus does something else very interesting. Not only is this man not to blame for his condition, his blindness becomes an occasion for God to do great things in him. This mirrors Paul's reflection on his own unknown incapacity, which he calls a thorn in the flesh. After Paul prayed that it be taken away, God responded, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness." Unlike Paul, though, Jesus will not leave this thorn in the blind man. He gives him sight. He doesn't merely restore sight. This man's never had it. And the way he does it is a really earthy way. It's a really crude method of doing it. Jesus spits on the ground. He makes a muddy paste and he puts it on the man's eyes. In an arid Jerusalem, I've been to Jerusalem before, and some of you have been, and it's kind of arid there. It's not, so you can kind of just imagine how much effort it would take Jesus to work up the saliva to do this. You're welcome for that image. But Jesus does that. He smears it on his eyes, and then he gives him a task. Go to the pool of Siloam and wash. Now, we may be put off by the unsanitary nature of Jesus' methods, but as we learned last week, Jesus is not God safely ensconced in some faraway heaven. Jesus is not God up there in some spiritual reality waiting for us to ascend from this mortal plane so that we can meet him. Jesus is God descended for us, God embodied, God enfleshed, God in the meat, with all the biological functions and vulnerabilities that implies. And fleshly bodies need physical means of healing, not just spiritual. Jesus, it's not too much to say, Jesus gives this man a sacrament, a one-time sacrament just for him, to receive the amazing healing power of God's grace. Such grace is made perfect through this man's weakness. But some people just can't accept a good thing when they see it. His neighbors don't believe it at first. After all, nothing like this has ever happened before. And when the religious leaders hear of it, they're immediately suspicious. When they learn Jesus is behind the healing, their disbelief hardens into out-and-out unbelief. Why? Well, first of all, they already have a history with Jesus. It goes back to his temple demonstration in John chapter 2. They tried to arrest him in chapter 7, and they nearly stoned him in John chapter 8. Second, Jesus did not observe proper procedure. He made mud to heal this man on a Sabbath day. So our problem is different today. Hardly anyone observes a real Sabbath in our society anymore, but entrapment and procedural minutiae is not a different thing. It's just as common today, maybe even more so than it was then. The religious leaders try to discount Jesus and the good work he has done for not doing it according to their interpretation of the commandment. They focus on the minutiae and miss the amazing work that God has been doing. In essence, they put the gospel on trial. And don't we do that sometimes? Don't we sometimes put ourselves in the position of judge and jury over everyone else? Don't we sometimes put the absolute worst construction on what our neighbor says and does? And I will grant you, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes our best construction, if it's just not very good. Sometimes people do messed up things. But don't we sometimes just jump to the worst conclusions about what they've done or why they've done it? Don't we sometimes miss good things that happen because we're too busy magnifying all the negatives? Don't we sometimes dismiss the deed and attack the person? Does that ever happen in your own family? There are plenty of examples around us, and if we're honest, in our own lives too. It's common human failure, and it is caused by hardened heart toward God and toward each other. The religious leaders are so convinced that Jesus is demonic that they don't know a good thing when they see it. They are too trapped on their own seat of judgment, which is a rather unsturdy seat indeed. So today, recognize a good thing when it is set before you. The Word of God doesn't always come to us in flashy and exciting ways. But the Word of God does come. The Word of God comes to you to heal, to save, and to bring you new life. This afternoon, it's not coming from the pastor of a large congregation with huge children's and youth programming. It's not coming from a congregation with a $1 million budget. It's not even coming from a real church service. By the way, I'm here in my office today, and this is not a podcast setup, not at all. If it were, I would have an actual ring light. I would have maybe some other lighting things going on. I would have multiple sound checks. I'd probably do this with other people. But this is about as ad hoc of a setup as you can get. The point is that the Word of God comes from Jesus Christ, who is God dwelling among us, who is God who has descended to us, and through people like me and you. The 53rd chapter of Isaiah even says that this chosen one of God wasn't much to look at. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. And when Jesus healed the man, he did so in the most unglamorous way that we might think of. But in doing that, he also invites us to be healed and to be transformed, to let go of our judgment seats, of our places of condemnation, and to receive him for who he is as our healing and life-giving Lord. He's here today for you too. Thanks be to God.